Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Tutor Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And we're waiting for our guests to call in, so I guess I could just start to get my voice lined up for all the live interviews taking place tomorrow in the Miami Book Fair. I will be broadcasting live from 9 to 2 p.m. Eastern on Saturday and Sunday. And you never know what's going to happen. And we just jump on the live bandwagon starting right now at noon as we're waiting for country music legend Charlie Daniels to call the program to talk about his latest project. So we're just waiting on him. And I have to start to think of things to talk about and get my voice roared up and ready to go for this weekend. My brain will be mushed after this, but I'm really excited now. I know that I already have my celebrity on the line, so I want to welcome the program Grammy Award-winning country music and southern rock star Charlie Daniels of the Charlie Daniels Band. Charlie Daniels, thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me, partner. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you coming on the show. I tell you what, When you recorded and you came up with the idea to write The Devil Went Down to Georgia, did you think it was going to be such a huge success that people from all these generations listened to that song? Did you ever think that was going to be that popular?
To be honest with you about it, I thought it would be a good show a good song for us, but I had no idea. You can't know a thing like that. You can't manufacture a thing like that. You just go in and take your God-given talent and go for it. And that's what we did on that particular song. I felt it would be a good tune for us. I thought it would get some airplay and all, but I had no idea. No, I did not.
So when did you get that word and you said to myself, holy cow, this is going to be huge? Was it, because especially in that time, it was a little different than the days of, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and iTunes. When did you know, hey, this is really doing well?
Well, we're still kind of experiencing that so many years after the fact is what's amazing, because usually if you have a quote-unquote hit record, it comes along, it lasts for, it's a hit, and it's concurrent, and then it lasts for a while, and somebody plays it once in a while, but it's not, it doesn't have that kind of staying power. And till this day, we're talking about 1979 when this thing was recorded and released, and it's just, still to this day, it's still the biggest song we do, and it still gets played on the air, and it still amazes me. But as to answer your question, it was a few weeks after when the single was released. It didn't take any time at all. Hard. It's the fastest record I have ever had insofar as going on the charts was concerned. It was just a matter, it seemed like a matter of days once it hit the ground and started picking up stations. It just took off like a house on fire.
See, and that's amazing. And what you're saying now is this song is still very, very popular. I remember, Charlie, I was a former professional wrestler, listening to this song, driving down the highways, all the entire United States listening to this song. And it would give me that kind of drive and that edge to keep going, especially almost traveling all night and different things. And then finally this song comes on, and then the fiddle plays, and oh, my gosh, it woke me back up from that long drive from different places like Kentucky, West Virginia, all the way back to Pittsburgh and stuff. So I remember that so great. But you're saying still, this is still so popular through all the different means to purchase it, sounds like.
Well, it still is, and amazes me about it, and what continues to amaze me about it is that places where they don't even speak English is a big song. In countries that English is not their language, it's still this tune still did really well. And if nowadays, if I go out of the country somewhere and somebody finds out my name, they'll say that's the song they remember. Is Devil Went Down to Georgia. They may not know anything else that we ever did, but they know Devil Went Down to Georgia. I've seen people ask teenage kids that they don't know me from Adam. They listen to, Justin Bieber or somebody. And I say, you know who Charlie Daniels is, isn't it? No, I don't know him. Well, this is Charlie. You know who he is? No. You ever heard of Uncle Ben went down to Georgia? Oh, yeah, you know. And that's the very young kids that are, you know, teenagers. And so it's been that kind of a song for us. It's been that kind of experience, that kind of tune that's just lasted through about three generations now. Thank God. I love it.
Well, I'm sure you're glad. It's something that is going to live forever in the minds of people, especially when you hear the fiddle and all the different things, and it's a cult classic in so many ways that will live on past your lifetime and probably past my lifetime. I know for a fact, and how certain music just becomes that. Now, Charlie, what makes you drive you still to perform? So we're going to talk about your latest projects now, your latest album, some of the other things that you're doing great, and of your upcoming projects. What keeps you wanting to still perform and perform at such a high level at this time of your career? You just keep going.
I love what I do. I am in love with entertaining people, with walking on stage. I love every aspect of my career. I love the recording. I love the writing. I love it all. But nothing, absolutely nothing, compares with the thrill and the enjoyment of walking on stage and entertaining people. And I've devoted over 50 years of my life to learning how to do it. And it's one of the few times in my life I ever actually feel like I really know what I'm doing is when I walk on stage. So my answer to your question would be, I do it because I love it. I sincerely love it.
That's what it is. When you find something you're passionate about, that you truly love, you'll do it regardless of any time, and it doesn't feel like work. And that's what it sounds like.
Right.
You say, you know, you're so blessed to have this opportunity to travel all over the world talking about this. So one of the projects, you have released a song that is dedicated to the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo and its contestants. Tell me a little bit about that song.
Last year, we're in Las Vegas. We play in Las Vegas every year during National Finals Rodeo, along with about three quarters of Nashville. I mean, it's just that time of year when country music does well out there. We were approached by one of the rodeo people and one of the people from Las Vegas events and said, can we want a song that can be identified with the National Finals Rodeo? You know, every sport's got a song, but Monday Night Football's got one. Everybody has one.
Yeah.
And can you do that? And well, what do you want in it? They told me, we want this element, that element, Las Vegas, cowboys, cowgirls, bucking stock, excitement, pyro, flashlights, flash pots. You know, I mean, that we want to get that feel. So I said, well, yeah, I think I can do that. And so I went back and wrote this song and sent it out to them and said, y'all like this? Oh, yeah, we like that. So we went ahead and recorded it. Just call it Don't Get No Better Than That. It incorporates those particular things that they wanted involved in it. It's about cowboys working all year long to make it to Las Vegas, and that's the big shot. That's the big money shot. That's the Super Bowl. That's the big deal. And trying to encapsulate that work and that excitement and what Las Vegas means about what they kind of be. Las Vegas takes on a little different. I've played there all kinds of different times of the year, but when the National Finals Rodeo is in town, it just seems to take on a whole different air about it. It's just, more like a friendly sort of a small town than people speak to each other. You know, everybody's there for the rodeo. People dressed up in their Western clothes, and it's just a great time to be in town. And we tried to put all that into the song, you know, into the feeling of Las Vegas, the excitement. So I'm going to debut it in the arena, in the rodeo arena, right before the rodeo on the 9th of December. So looking forward to that.
So then and that song, again, dedicated to the rodeo, a tremendous sport, to say the least, and you say that all they have, and you got the honor to do that. That's fantastic. Another thing is your album came out, I think, as I'm grabbing, just jumping over to it, your album came out live at Billy Bob's Texas, is now available. Tell us specifically about the album. Yeah.
Well, it's a part of a series. They've been doing a series there called Live at Billy Bob's. Merle Haggard did one, Willie Nelson, Pat Green, quite a few people, and that we were asked to do it. And of course, we had played Billy Bob's many times and was familiar with it. It's a great atmosphere for doing a live album in, because people walk through the door with a smile on their face. They come in to party. They come in to have a good time. And it's when you, by the time you hit the stage, everybody's all ready to roll. Everybody's, you know, in a good mood, and it's just it really spurs the band on and kind of spurs the people on, and we just get together and had a good time. And that's what we ended up with, live at Billy Bob's.
Fantastic. And so, and you just keep recording, keep doing stuff. Close to running out of time, about the fiddle. Now, tell me specifically how you put that into the whole feel of the band, that story with the fiddle.
Actually, I started that. I played fiddle for quite a few years, and when I started playing for a living, rock music was huge, and I just put the fiddle down for a while because there didn't seem to be any, you know, any real call for it. One day I just thought, I'm going to pick up my fiddle and play a song on it, and I did. And people loved it, and when I started recording, I just started writing songs that would work around the fiddle, that the fiddle would work good on. So it's been a part of my show and my recording and everything ever since then.
That's great. And how many people have come to you saying, how do you play the fiddle so well? And you see younger people wanting to take up the fiddle. Do you see that happening,
well,
Charlie?
I always tell younger people who come to me and ask about playing fiddle, I always tell them, don't look at me, because I do it all wrong. I've never had a lesson. I can't read music. I just started learning on my own. So I hold the fiddle wrong. I hold the bow wrong. I put too much pressure on the bow, but it works for me. It's part of my style, but it may not work for you. So don't, you know, don't copy me when you play fiddle. You'll run your violin teacher crazy.
That's funny. Anything else you're promoting right now, Charlie? I see you're very, very involved in social media. I liked you on Facebook, and I see you tweeting a lot and different things. Anything else you have promoting right now?
Not particularly, other than, you know, we need to tighten up here in America and be very vigilant and watch our backs here. It's a dangerous time. You know, pray for America. We need it.
Pray for our soldiers as well. And pray for America.
Absolutely.
To find peace. And if we don't speak up, this is the greatest country in the world. And people need to say that. It's the only place where you can make a song like "The Devil Went Down to Georgia" and it's the most popular. That would not happen in other countries because they control everything.
No.
Here we have
absolutely
freedom to do what we want to do. And God bless America. And God bless you, Charlie.
God bless
Daniel.
America.
Where's the best place we can find information on you, purchase your music, and learn more about you? Where can we go?
CharlieDaniels.com. Everything you ever want to know about CDB, and probably some things you don't even care about.
Well, Charlie, I really enjoyed the conversation. Love to have you on longer, but I know how busy you are, and I'm busy as well. But definitely reach out to me when you're promoting something else, or you have some foundational work or different things you're trying to help out. I definitely love to have you back on. So take care.
Thank you, my friend. God bless you. Talk to you soon.
All right. God bless, Charlie Daniels. Take care. See ya. Bye-bye. All right, okay, that was Grammy Award-winning country music star Charlie Daniels. We will be live again today at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. Take care. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+, Neil Haley, and also on Periscope, at TotalTutor. And I'm really excited about my guest today. Because I'd like to talk about childhood, some of the programs he's doing right now, his latest show. So I'm excited to welcome the program celebrity actor Daniel Baldwin. Daniel, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Thanks for having me on, Neil. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, and it's great. It's always great getting close to the holidays and all the fun things that happen during the holidays. I have 5 kids myself, Daniel, and life is crazy, but it's a lot of fun, and it's always great when we talk about Thanksgiving, Christmas coming up for sure. Daniel, when I was thinking about specifically how crazy the Baldwin household was, and was it especially with the number of actors in your family? Tell us a little bit about that story growing up, and like at the dinner table and different things like that.
Well, there was a show in the 70s called Can You Top This? I don't know if you recall this show, but it was a show where comedians came on and somebody would do some antic or some joke or whatever it was, and then the next guy had the with a laugh meter top the predecessor, and so that's kind of like what it was like at my house. You know, it was one person went into the spiel, and then the next one had to top them, and then you expanded on that, and so on and so forth. And it hasn't really changed much. You know, we all get together. You know, one person brings up an actor they're working with, if you will, and then the story, you know, spawns another story, and then it's pretty much about captivating the family audience and trying to beat each other, you know, in the laugh factor.
Okay, so a lot of comedy at the dinner table then, it sounds like.
For sure. Yeah, a lot of comedy, and depending on the holiday, you know, so we used to play, and we still occasionally do at our age now, but we played a turkey bowl. Now, the turkey bowl was the granddaddy of football games. It was played on Thanksgiving Day, and then we went to the dinner table after we played this festive football game. So after Alec lost, because usually it was Alec quarterbacked one team and I quarterbacked the other, and then Billy and Steven went on with one of us, and then we took on, you know, the neighborhood kids. Well, I traditionally would slaughter Alec in the turkey bowl. So he turned around, and on Christmas Day one day, he decided to play the Baby Jesus Bowl. So he invents a new bowl game. He invents a new bowl game in order to try to garner a win, and he loses the Baby Jesus Bowl for like 5 or 6 straight years. Now we're, you know, in our late teens, early 20s, and he comes up with the He's Arisen Bowl, which is played on Easter Sunday. So we now have the Turkey Bowl, the Baby Jesus Bowl, and Alec wins the first annual He's Arisen Bowl to get his first bowl game victory. And so, yeah, that's another big tradition in the family, the holiday football game.
So all the brothers, when did you guys first start acting? How old were you?
Well, professionally,
professionally
is a different story than when we actually started. My dad was a high school football coach and a high school teacher in my hometown on Long Island.
Oh.
And so in 1966, he asked the district to buy him an 8mm camera so he could send one of the coaches off to film the opposing team for scouting purposes. And they turned him down and said they didn't have it in the budget. So my father bought that 8mm camera himself. Well, Alec and myself and the Cornelius brothers behind us, this family that lived right over the fence from us, decided that we wanted to use that camera. And we asked my father permission on the property. His rule was 3 rules. You couldn't leave the property. If you broke the camera, you better have the money to fix it. And I wasn't supplying you. My father was never going to supply us any money to buy the film or anything. So we'd go to Peninsula Golf Course and sell nickel cups of iced tea until we procured enough money to buy another roll of 8mm film. And we were back in production. And we made several movies, probably 25, 30 different films. And progressively, they got, you know, more advanced and elaborate and so on. So we knew when we were very little, we were intrigued very much by film, Alec and I. I never thought to myself that my other two brothers would also, because they were much younger than us. In my house, it went 3 and 3. There was Elizabeth, my older sister, and then my brother Alec and myself. And then the next 3 were kind of, you know, the next shift, if you will. We were definitely raised, you know, in 3 as 3s, kind of, never really all as 6. We were, by the time my mother and father went through the guinea pig stage of, you know, figuring out what it was to be a parent and so on, they softened and loosened up my father especially, his grip on the family and his strictness. But Alec, Beth, and I, he was really strict with us.
And so high school teacher, interesting. My wife and I are teachers, so, and we have 5 kids, and that's an interesting story. And I could just see when our youngest, our 2 boys, it's like 2 different groups as well, as my oldest daughter is 10 years old, while you go down the line, and our youngest is 1. So it's going to be an interesting type of a group as well. So you grew up in a large, large family. So I definitely would say chaos was definitely part of life in the Baldwin household, not just with dinner, but when you have a big family, it's a different atmosphere. I know this from living it with all my kids now and seeing it, because I was only a child. So this is like a culture shock in a lot of ways, of having this big of a family. And always, there's never any quiet, is there?
No. I mean, I can recall things. I went to school in the Midwest, and I mean, in my house, you couldn't say anything. If you said the word ass in my house, you were going to be severely punished. I mean, I never heard my father say, damn, I never heard nothing. You could not swear. You could not, you know, and it was really strict. I remember coming home from college and seeing my brother Stephen with his friends all in the living room, and there was beer cans. And I looked at the beer cans, and I thought, were they drinking in the house? And I'll never forget it. I remember walking into my mother's room going, those boys are seniors in high school or juniors in high school, and they were drinking in the house? And my mother said, I'd rather do what you boys did, you and Alec, when you ran around and drove cars. She goes, I'd rather keep them here where I know where they are. And I thought, well, there's time eroding on, you know, on society right there. Because if my father was alive to have seen those kids drinking in that house, he would have killed somebody. He would have killed someone.
and I have a feeling that's what will happen. And it's the older we get, Daniel, I'm sure, that, you know, we have this tremendous energy, my wife and I, about when Ava, my youngest. But now it's like, I'm 42, she's 41, and we're like, okay, getting ready to go to work, getting this, and our energy levels going less and less. And then, okay, do we really want to fight and argue? And I'm sure with Alec and yourself, your parents were very strict, but you guys, I'm sure, were not always compliant, were you?
Oh, my God, no. Are you kidding me? We did more terrible things. The fact that my mother came out of that situation without being institutionalized is a miracle. I mean, we did. The cops would show up at my house and knock on the door, and they knew my mother by a first name basis. I mean, we constantly were doing stuff, you know, silly thing. You know, not really ever to hurt anybody else, you know, but we'd break into the golf course and open the window and climb in and open the door, open the garage door, and drive around all night with 25 golf carts with our friends and just leave them abandoned all over the course. And sure enough, they'd call the cops, and the cops would come right to the Baldwin doorstep and go, were the kids on the golf course last night? Because there's 25 missing golf carts right now. You know, we leave them out on streets and people's homes, and oh yeah, we were fun, wild.
Interesting. Okay, so when you decided to do this professionally, Alec was first, then you second for professional acting?
You know, I went to college, and then my oldest daughter was born, and I delayed my – so I think Billy and I kind of started around the same time. Billy models for a little while. I didn't really start until my late 20s. Stephen, ironically, it was the only one that didn't go to college, and he kind of went right into it. So, you know, Billy, Stephen, and I all started acting almost around the same time. But Alec definitely started first, for sure.
And then is it hard falling, Alec, when you're, like, going for auditions and different things and saying, okay, you know, and especially if they've worked with Alec before or they know who Alec is when you go for auditions?
You know,
especially at the
I'd be lying to say it's on a double-edged sword. And here's one of the things. Number one, Alec has never been shy to use, you know, his political views and his opinions on things and so on and so forth. So, you know, there are those people that really love him and those people who don't like him at all. So if you run into some of the people that don't like him at all, your chances, because we look and sound quite a bit alike, of being selected for that role are pretty slim. It's going to be used against me. And then there's people that love him, you know, and lying, I'd be lying to say that his popularity doesn't vault me, you know, guilt by association in some ways. I'll tell you this, though. I don't think it's ever gotten me a job, but certainly having three famous brothers can be very advantageous, you know. We're seen as one in many cases. But I have a great story for you, though.
When
you speak early on career wise. So, John Sayles is doing the movie Eight Men Out, the baseball film, and I'm in the waiting room. I'm going in to read for this film, and the casting director's door is cracked open here, and all I hear her say is, no, 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 he can't do it. He's doing some other movie. But I got his brother here right now, and his brother actually played baseball in high school. He's a much better athlete, so let's see how he does. So now, of course, I hear this, and I've surmised from it that they wanted Alec for this role, and I know it's to play Chick Gandell, the first baseman, who wants it. And the scene, I think Michael Rooker eventually played the role and played it very well. But in the scene, he walks up to these guys in the bar and he tells them this boxing story. And he tells them this boxing story because he wants them to know he's, hint, 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 willing to throw the World Series also, and that he wants in on the money. So in the scene, he says, you know, I'm dancing around in the ring and I'm walking around on something underneath my feet, and it's the guy's teeth I just knocked out of his head. He said, now, if we were smart, I'd have hit him a few times, and I stood up and threw two lefts. And I said, I'd have hit him a few times, pow, pow. And I said, pow, pow, and threw two left jabs. I said, and he hits me a few times, pow, pow, and I take two right hands to the side of my face and snap my head back like I'm getting hit. And then I went, you know, and later on we meet and we split the money 50-50, and I wiped my two hands, like, as if to say, all gone, and we split the money 50-50, and nobody gets hurt. Now, the pow-pow and the standing up and the jabbing are not in the script. And the getting smacked in the face twice and saying pow-pow are not in the script. So I read this, and I get called back in by John Sayles himself, who says, I see that you rehearsed this with your brother Alec. You must have known that we wanted him, right? And I looked at the guy and I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. I said, I overheard the casting director. I have to say, I got excited because I do play baseball and I played in high school. And I said, so if you wanted Alec, and Chick Candell is described as the strongest hands, I'm bigger and I'm stronger than him. So there's no shame in your game, Daniel. You can tell us you rehearsed this. It's obvious you rehearsed it. I looked at him and I said, I did not rehearse this, nor did I ever mention this to my brother. He went, Barbara, could you throw Alec Baldwin's tape in? At the same exact instant, Alec stood up. He threw two lefts and said, pow, pow. He took two rights and said, pow, pow, and shaked the two hands and rubbed them together and said, and nobody gets hurt. And I'm looking with my mouth open at this guy, trying to get this guy to believe that I didn't rehearse this with my brother. And God is my witness. Our same four improvs were identical in the scene.
Oh, my. You know what the reason is? It's because of you guys doing so many in-house movies together growing up, making your own homemade movies and performing with each other. You taught each other how to act.
Yeah, it's all that stuff. There's funny times when I watch his work and I watch something and I know when it wasn't in the script, I know that's just him doing it. And so I'll call him and I'll say, hey, blah, blah, blah. And he'll go, yeah, no, I made that up. And I go, I knew you made that up. And I can just tell that there are things that we would do.
Interesting. Again, we're talking to Daniel Baldwin. And I love the stories. And I know sometimes you don't get the opportunity to tell those stories. You'd have a fantastic book, tell you, if you've not written one yet. Your memoir would be very, very interesting. Because people love to know about stories. And you're a great storyteller. Would you say the rest of the Baldwin brothers are great storytellers as much as you are? Because, I mean, I could be talking to you for hours. I could just tell. I mean,
I think when you're vying for attention, because there's only a certain amount of time that each person can speak. So when you come out of a household of expressive people that are vying for attention, I think everyone has their own niche. I think that Alec, I like listening to him tell stories because, you know, he and I will have a tendency to do voices with them and impersonations of people that we've seen along the way while you're telling the story. We used to play a great game in Central Park. We would walk in and it was an observation acting game where we would, if it was my turn to pick, Neil, then we both walk through, you know, the park for a little while, and then I'd start going, him. And you'd go, and you know, and it would be some homeless guy who had, you know, Tourette's or whatever it was. And you'd be like, come on, man, don't make me do that one. And so to punish the person, you'd make them do somebody who was really obscure and way out there. Because you had 5 minutes to observe the person. And then I'd say, clock's on now. And you had to become the person. And if anyone came up to you that you knew, you could not break character. You had to stay in character. Now, we were allowed to do a mercy thing where you look at the person and go, okay, off, and then you could interact with the person. So I'll never forget one time, John F. Kennedy Jr., who we used to play football with in the park all the time, Alec and I were playing the game, and he was this guy who was, you know, like, yeah, you know, making all these noises and all this great stuff. And so JFK rides up on the on his bicycle, and he goes, hey, what's up? And I say, hey, Johnny, how you doing? And he looks over at Alec, and Alec just gives me the look like, don't do this to me. And I just kept shaking my head. And so he starts making the noises. And Kennedy looks at him and goes, are you okay? And, you know, my mom said, well, and he's talking about some event that they're going to do, and I gave him no mercy. And so when the 10 minutes were over, we almost came to blows in the park. He was so mad at me for not letting him off the hook. But I was enjoying it so much, I didn't do it.
Oh, wow. And that's right, getting expression. And I already can see it. My first daughter is just like, you know, we're going to be a bunch of talkers and a bunch of entertainers. And, Daniel, I'm a former professional wrestler, minor leagues, never made it to the WWE full-time, but I wrestled. So I was kind of like to the minor leagues. My wife did acting. My wife did this, that, and the other. And my daughter's a big sings in the choir and stuff. But see, all the kids are trying to figure out their niche, how they can get a word in edgewise in a big family. And so that's why that's why a big family is a great thing, because kids get to, they're never going to be someone that aren't going to be able to go out and talk to people. And that's success in life. You can't communicate with others, regardless of your book smart. You're not going to get that job. You're not going to get that opportunity. And that's the great thing of big families, which we don't see a lot of anymore. So I didn't know that it was a family of six. And did you share bathrooms too? How many bathrooms were there in the house?
Two bathrooms in the house, and you know the girls were spread out. So Beth was the oldest, and Jane was the second youngest. So there really wasn't a huge connection between them and tying them in the bathroom. Beth was my oldest sister, was my mom's right hand man. So you know she was kind of the enemy. We always looked upon her as a rat. She was gonna tell on us. She was like having another mom. So we were Alec and I usually were opposed to Beth. And she kind of, my father was very strict, there was no ever touching the girls. You couldn't really talk back to them. If you did any of that stuff, you had to face my father, and he's pretty tough. So, the bathroom stuff, the girls always had the right of way. You know, if they were in there, if they had to use it, you had to wait. So we didn't run into a lot of bathroom stuff. I'd say it was more we scrambled for food. You know, he was a high school teacher. You know, if you didn't get down there early and get in that cereal, your chances of getting something, you had to eat something else. That box of cereal was devoured like locusts that hit that table.
It's terrible about the food, especially I'm 6'10", Daniel, and when I go and I get home sometimes late from work because of tutoring kids and coming home, and I'm like, what the heck? There's no food for me. Oh, my wife's like, I left this for you. I said, that could feed one of the kids, one of the little kids, not me. And that's the stories of big families. All right, so what would you say was your greatest accomplishment acting and producing? Like, give me one of each. And then I want to get into specifically how you battled addiction and your latest projects. There's a lot we have to talk about, and you definitely give a lot of information. And it's phenomenal because I think people don't get the chance to hear from you like today. So I think that's great.
Yeah, I don't know that you can ever really say what's your best or most important, but I have a movie right now that's just going to market. It's been in 11 film festivals. I shot the film for $60,000. I wrote it, I directed it, I produced it, and I acted in it. And I just went and played cards last night with Lou Diamond Phillips, who was so gracious as to appear in this film, and my brother Billy.
Wow.
It's been in 11 film festivals and won Best Picture 11 times, which is pretty hard to do with a little movie like this against much bigger films.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a film about a guy who used to kidnap clients and bring them up into this cabin in the mountains and detox them off of heroin and get them sober. And it's a true story based on a guy that I knew. The movie is called The Wisdom to Know the Difference. And I will say this, I've been in films that have won Oscars, and I've been in films that have won Golden Globes and TV series that have been showered with Emmys. But from this film, the SOBA Recovery Center in San Antonio was built. And I don't know how many people can say that they have made movies that, as a direct result of making them, have saved other human beings' lives. And that's something I'm pretty proud of. And so I don't know that I'll ever do another body of work that's as important as that statement, because there's a lot of kids right now that have moms and dads as a result of the making of this film. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, I'm very excited for you that the success of it with the film festivals and helped with that. And your battling of addiction, it's just something where it's an always an everyday process. But when you made that decision to get help, and then got help from people like the organization that you're helping build now through that film, that was big for you, wasn't it? To get
it was
the,
big, you know.
Yeah.
It was definitely big. You know, I mean, when I finally gave up on the idea that I had a better way than being in some type of a program of action to help with my addiction, it became a lot easier for me. And that circle of the 12 steps, where at the end, the last one is having had a spiritual awakening, we now go out there to help the addict that still suffers. Well, that was a big component for me. You know, I mean, I needed to get out of myself and realize that, you know, the Lord gave me a lot of great, great opportunities and skills and gifts in my life.
Yes.
Being able to use them for other reasons than trying to buy a nicer car or live in a nicer place, but actually help other human beings, became the thing that kept me sober. So it's by the grace of God, for sure.
That's a great mission, to know that God has called you. You found that out. And you said, now I'm going to do this, and I'm going to make a difference, and I'm going to use my gifts and talents to help others. After someone helped me, someone stepped in and said, Daniel, you have to get your act together and go through that process, and that's the big thing. But life doesn't continues, and I want to ask about a couple more projects. You can at least give quick promotes, but I know how quickly
sure.
you have to get on to the next call. But you have an announcement to make that you're struggling through something else as well, and tell us about that battle and how you're trying to overcome that.
I am, you know, so for a long time, the abuse of food and in my family lineage too, I found. So I'm not feeling very well. And my wife says to me, you know, I think you need to go to the doctor the way you're acting right now. And so I finally succumb to the pressure and I go to the doctor. And she says, my wife tells the doctor, can you please check the sugar? I really believe that he has some type of sugar imbalance. And the doctor said, no, we don't have, we're going to check first of all. She said, please check the sugar. Now, I don't know if you know much about diabetes, but your sugar should be somewhere between 90 and 150 or whatever. They take my sugar reading and the machine can't register it that high. They had to get another machine which registered me at 690. So my sugar was at 690. Then I went in, and they immediately say, you got to go to the hospital. You're like pre-cardiac arrest and stroke and blah, blah. So they start taking all these tests, and they did my blood test, and they did my cholesterol. And my cholesterol was 1,180. That should be somewhere around 140, 170, whatever it is. So I'm in pretty bad shape at the time. And I hooked up with a guy named Robert Ferguson, who has a place called Diet Free Life, which is about eating, you know, smaller meals in moderation. It's not a huge jolt in your life. There are lots of things that you can still eat, you know, as opposed to, but it's the combinations by which you eat them in so that they work with each other in your body. And so I'm just starting this program right now where I meet with Robert and we exercise and we go over my diet, and he's gonna have a whole app and everything that he puts out, but it's called Diet Free Life, and so I'll let you know. We'll have to get back with each other so I can show you the results over the course of the next 6 months. I'm just starting it this week, so I'm very excited.
I want to stay in touch. I want to talk more. There's so much more to talk about. Any other projects you have promoting? I know you again did Big Brother Celebrity UK, and you represented the United States. How did that go, doing reality television? I know you did that before with VH1 in the 2000s, early 2000s. What did you think of that experience?
I love being over in the UK, and there's a couple of people that I'll retain friendships with that I did that show with. But all in all, anytime you say the two words Janice Dickinson to me, it's usually a pretty tough pill to swallow. The behavior of a lot of people over in that house, I was ashamed at how they behaved in front of our British friends. And, you know, it's just sad that The show is sold on its sensationalism and the erratic, crazy, kooky behavior of people, which if it was just kooky and not, you know, rude or inappropriate, I think that would have been enough to sell the day. But you know, they live off of, you know, the fights and the swearing and the terrible stuff that they did. I was really happy to be voted out. I was very excited to get out of there because it actually, psychologically, there were people in there that I felt it was hurting them terribly. It was something. I'm more geared to do the jungle show, you know what I mean, or the thing where, you know, I could do that kind of stuff where I've got to go hunt or trap or do whatever, you know, and try to get by with your wit, then try to get by with how loud you have to be. You know, at 55 years old, I have no desire anymore to scream and holler. So it wasn't a great experience for me, actually. I didn't enjoy being in the house at all. And I was happy to be voted. When they voted me out, I was literally inside cheering.
How long ago were you voted out? When did the season, like, is it still going on this season?
I went in there. No. It's like a one-month thing. And besides, I didn't have any delusions that I was going to win it. It was being voted upon by a British audience, and it was America versus Great Britain. So they just systematically kept kicking out the Americans that were a threat in any way. And this young British kid, really lovely kid, he won, James Hill. And I knew he would win. I was the first one voted out. And when I got voted out, I said, it's James Hill's going to win it for sure. He's handsome. He's a lovely kid. I said, if they don't vote that kid to win it, he deserves to win it. You can't give someone accolades for terrible behavior. Those people that acted terribly will stay in the show for a great amount of time.
Yes.
Because they're interesting and they're fun to watch, but you never give them the victory. And the British people, thank goodness for them, they allowed James to win because James deserved to win. He's a nice lad.
Oh, wow. Okay, any other projects to promote? You talked about the film. You talked about you are also acting in a film right now too, right? Or just finished up acting that's coming out, right?
I've got a few films, but I think I'm more excited right now about the fact that I'm going to do my first cooking show with my wife. We're going to shoot the show in my home. The show is about, it was spawned from a neighbor saying he wanted to go golfing with me, and I'm a pretty proficient golfer. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, we should bring the girls, you know. And he said, really, you want to bring the girls to go golfing? And that's pretty much an old adage that most golfers don't bring their wives and everything. And I said, you know, one of the reasons why my marriage is so good is A, I'm sober, and B, I spend a lot of time with my wife talking with her about things. And when I go golfing, I actually love to go golfing with my wife. She's not a great golfer, but she's just learning how to play. But I'm in a cart with her, and I'm driving around, and I'm spending 5 uninterrupted hours with my beautiful woman, who's talking to me about things that really matter to her, talking to me about things that we need to get discussed without outside interruptions. So the same will be said of us, because we spend a lot of time in the kitchen together. And so we live in that farm belt in Oxnard, California, where we drive up our major boulevard, and those big farm stands, fresh out of the ground, pulled off the vine, and put into your hands. So we're going to shoot the show with a little bit of the beginning of us picking the recipe, us going then and buying the fresh produce, and then coming home, because during that time that we cook, we talk about stuff to do with the kids. We talk about stuff to do in our life. We talk about what our plans are for the rest of the week and so on and so forth. So it's really like a couple show too. And then we're going to invite another couple over each episode to come sit in the backyard by the water and enjoy the fruits of our labor.
That's tremendous. So have you been picked up on a station yet, or is it just filming and then waiting to see where that's
going
to go?
You know, I've gone that route before. I think we're going to shoot maybe a couple episodes ourselves. You know, we live right on the canal, so we can actually take our little boat and go out and catch the fish we're going to cook. You know, so, I mean, we're going to do some fun, innovative stuff that I don't know that has been seen before on our standard cooking show. And I think the most important thing about it is that, it's a couple that really love to be with each other. So we're going to shoot that.
Oh, that's great. Good luck for sure with that and all that, and that's gonna be fun. And then is it a web series, you think? You have no idea once it's done what's gonna happen with it.
No, I'll take it to like the Cooking Channel and places like that, or even, you know, Lifetime, or, you know, I think Oprah would like a show like this. You know, they like to do things. Yeah, so I mean there's definitely a few places to take it to. We'll see what happens. I never get involved in that part because it bores me to tears, you know, to get involved in the business aspect. So I like to just stay on the creative side and let those people in my life, like my attorneys and my manager, John McGalliard, and people like that, they handle all that.
You got to have a team to take care of things or life becomes absolutely hectic and crazy. Where's the best place we can find information on you, Daniel, so you can update us on the projects? You have other films, and you never know what's going to happen next with Daniel Baldwin. And like I said, we're going to watch
you know
the story about your weight and everything as well. And
yeah. So I'll be posting that on my Twitter. So follow me on Twitter. It's at Daniel Baldwin. And it's got the blue check next to it because my account is verified. Follow me on Twitter and you'll see starting next week, I'm going to start weighing in each day and do the whole bit.
All right. So how many pounds do you want to drop? What's the goal?
I'm a whopping 285 pounds right now. So I think I'm going to go down to, I'm going to predict that I'll get down to like 230. I'll lose 55 pounds probably doing this is what we're projecting.
Okay. I'm 280 pounds, but 6'10". I don't know how tall you are, Daniel. So, I still need to drop 10 pounds. We all need to lose weight. It's the most difficult time, but the best time in a way, because this is when you can gain 20 pounds with the holidays. So best of luck.
Yeah.
Healthy. And that's what the important thing with your cooking show, that you're going to show people that you don't need to hit the fast food places. You don't need to go with the processed food. Get the healthy foods, cook nicely, and it's going to be a big thing. So I appreciate it. You have a lot of very interesting stories, and I'll have you back on once you can tell me about that success story, okay? Or anything else, just reach out to me. I'm happy to have you on.
Yeah. Thank you so much, bro.
All right, take care, Daniel. See you later.
All right,
okay.
God bless
Bye-bye.
You. Bye.
God bless you, too. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, that was the Total Celebrity Show. Take care, guys. We're going to be live at 3 p.m. Eastern with Tyrone Poole, former New England Patriot. Take care, everyone.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+. And I'm so excited to welcome the program from ABC's Fresh Off the Boat, Forrest Wheeler. Forrest, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'm so glad to get the chance to talk to you. It's kind of like we've been playing phone tag and everything to get in touch, but what an amazing ride you're having to be on Fresh Off the Boat after last season and now the second season. You got to be so enthused, aren't you, and excited?
I'm very excited for the new season. It's premiering in 4 days, and I can't wait to see the first episode.
Now tell us, Forrest, did you always want to be an actor? Is this something you always wanted to do?
When I was younger, I was kind of shy, and acting wasn't my goal, but I tried acting again, and I liked it, and I loved it a lot, and then I got an agent, and I'll start from there. It's now my passion.
It's now your passion. So tell us, what was your first break? What did you do first in acting? Tell us about that.
My first job was The Incredible Burt Wonderstone. It was a movie with Steve Carell, Steve Buscemi, and Jim Carrey, and Olivia Wilde. And that was my very first job, and I was very excited that I got it.
So tell me how the process of going through that first job, especially when you've decided and say, okay, I'm going to go out, I got an agent, I'm going through this process. Like, how does it work? So for young people listening out there to understand going through this process of trying to get a job in acting.
Well, during the audition, I had a cry, and the casting agent said that I did really well, and she thought I was actually crying. And it just all started from there.
It all started from there, and that's fantastic. And from that, what other notable jobs before Fresh Off the Boat? Anything other things you acted in? Tell us about that.
I did several commercials before Fresh Off the Boat. I did shows like Community, New Girl, and Chasing Life, as well as Mortal Kombat, which is a web series, as in, because I did martial arts and it was very cool. And that's how I started my XMA, because of Mortal Kombat, because Dallas Liu, he showed me X-Ray, and I loved it a lot. Also, I did a movie called Such Good People.
Cool, cool. So now tell us the story of how you got this opportunity. I mean, because I'm going to tell you how much I like the show, Forrest, and we'll talk about the 90s and stuff, and I like reminiscing in so many ways. But tell us specifically, once you heard about this show, how did that happen?
My casting director gave me the audition, and I just went for it, and it took 5 tries because of all the... everything that they do. There's one specific one, it's chemistry test, and I was just really excited that I got the job, and right as I found out, I called Ian, who plays Evan on the show, and I'm like, hey, brother.
And then there it happened. But did you think that the show, when you first did it, was just a pilot, right? You had no idea if it was going to get picked up or not, right?
Yes, yes. I had no idea it was going to go this far. And hopefully many more seasons are going to come.
Oh, definitely, because I think it's such a great show to look at, specifically a family and things like that. And Forrest, for our listeners that have not watched Fresh Off the Boat, tell us your character.
My character is Emery Wong. He plays a younger, cool brother of Eddie, and he's a ladies' man. He has girlfriends on his first day. He fits in very well, unlike all the other cast members, unlike the other family. On the first day, and yet he even comes with the girlfriend back home on the very first day.
And yeah, it's funny that in that episode, what happened basically is that, you know, you basically, everyone else was dealing with this challenge of moving from Washington, D.C. to Orlando, Florida, and you're the only one that was able to kind of work out. Everything worked out for you, right?
Yes.
And definitely, and your character is going to go through some interesting things this year. I know you can't tell us what's going to happen, but everyone's going to have to stay tuned, right, to see how this character develops in the second season.
Yes, yes. I can tell you, though, that there's some really cool guest stars coming on, like there's Shaq and Rob Riggler and Jeremy Lin. I'm very excited that I got to meet them because I love them a lot, and they're great inspiration. And also some MMA. And I asked him if she could last longer than 45 seconds as Ronda Rousey, and he said yes.
What do you think of Ronda Rousey? What's your take on her?
She's very good at fighting.
Yeah, isn't it amazing how UFC's taken off? I don't know if your publicist told you this, Forrest, but I was a former professional wrestler, so I was in the, I guess, fake fighting game, but I see a lot of similarities of UFC to the days of old-time wrestling when they didn't say it was real. So I still think that a lot of it's real, but I don't know about how, you know, quickly these fights happen for sure, and that's interesting. And you said also Shaq is going to be on the show as well?
Yes, he is.
Now, Shaq's one of my favorite basketball players. I'm 6'10", by the way, Forrest, so that guy is huge and a huge personality and stuff for sure, isn't he?
Wait, you're 6'10"?
Yeah, I'm 6'10", yeah.
Wow, you're very tall.
Exactly, yeah, definitely. So I'm big. I was bigger in life in wrestling and trying to be bigger life in radio now. But what I was saying, Forrest, is he's a good guy, isn't he, Shaq?
Yes, he's very funny as well.
Yeah, he seems like that's some way us big guys have to figure out some sort of niche, some way to keep ourselves from, you know, saying, look how tall you are, and try to bring some sort of personality out, or else they'll think we're just a dumb big guy for sure. Now, Forrest, tell us specifically, are you going to school right now, or are you being homeschooled?
Right now, I'm being homeschooled, and I have a studio teacher, where we have a studio teacher on set who helps us with school.
Interesting, interesting. And where are you from, Forrest? Where do you live?
I was born and raised in California.
Oh, so you're perfect setting. And was acting something that any of your other family members do that made you want to become an actor?
Mostly my mom. She decided to bring me to an acting class because I'd always be acting in the car, so...
Acting, getting away with things for us when you're little. Tell us, yes. So what advice would you offer kids that are in your position when you're going to become an actor? What types of things would you tell them to prepare for or do when they have an opportunity to get a gig? Tell us about that.
Just keep trying hard as you can. And once you get a gig, then just take that opportunity because it's a very good experience and enjoy the journey.
Enjoy the journey, and that's what you're hoping for season after season, to enjoy the journey. Who have you learned from, especially from the cast, working with the cast, and specifically on a daily basis? Who has been the best mentor for you for the show, would you say?
They've all been very good mentors. They've all taught me different things, but especially Randall. He taught me how to do facial acting because he was very good at that, with different expressions, like moving one eyebrow up and one eyebrow down. So that's been very good. And I've learned a lot of acting tips, and they've all gave me acting tips and life tips, and I'm very thankful for that.
Well, and I'm glad you're thankful for that, because it's amazing always to get to learn from other people in so many ways. My favorite thing of the show is the 90s. And I think it was so great that they chose that theme, because we always are seeing 80s and 70s shows. It's good now for us that we're finally reminiscing about the 90s. I know you weren't born then or to deal with the 90s, but the 90s were an interesting time. So do you have to kind of look back in history in different ways of how they've dressed and how they acted in the 90s, and look back to some of the artists and who was popular then?
Yes, I have, because I hadn't seen Mariah Carey, and at that time, I had no idea who she was. And also, there is a scene with a pager in it, so I looked up what a pager was, and I found out it's like a buzzer phone flash thing.
Yeah, pagers were cool when we had no cell phones, and we wanted to say, hey, that we were always popular, so then we'd have to go find a payphone for us and make a call. Can you imagine payphones? That was in the 90s, trust me, a payphone. So you're going ahead and you're saying, okay, my pager just hit me up. Okay, let me go find a payphone and make a phone call. That would be a funny part of the show. And I also think that looking at suburbia and how, you know, you guys came from Washington, D.C. to suburbia, and how the suburbs were in Orlando at that time. That's funny as anything. And just, I guess, how public education is with the cast of characters. So anything else to clue us in on the big premiere? Anything else for us to know about, that maybe a little other secret you can give us, or something else about your character? And are you still going to be a ladies' man this year?
You'll have to see about the ladies, man. But I can tell you that the first episode, we're going on a family vacation, which is going to be very fun. So that episode was really cool. So you guys have to tune in to watch it September 22nd in 4 days. Can you believe?
Oh my gosh, 4 days. I mean, I can't believe it. I love ABC's lineup and, you know, all the shows on ABC. And I tell you, Forrest, it seems like it's been forever since we've had new shows. So I'm excited about ABC's premieres, and I definitely will be tuning in on September 22nd. So best place we can find information on you, Forrest, and learn more about you. I know that you did retweet one of my tweets, but where can we find info on you? Where's the best place?
On Twitter, you can find me at Wheeler_Forrest, as well as Instagram is Wheeler_Forrest. And my Facebook page is Forrest Wheeler page.
All right. Well, fantastic, Forrest. Best of luck to you. And thanks for taking the time to come on the show. And I'll be tuning in, and I'll be tweeting you out during the show on the 22nd. So thanks again for calling.
It was really fun to be on here.
I enjoyed talking with you. Dick, take care. Okay? All right, see you, Forrest. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.